The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier and Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show here today. My name is Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Saulnier. We've got a good show here today. We're going to talk a little bit about UTMAs and UGMAs with our special guest, estate planning attorney Peter Scott. I believe we've got a little tax talk as well. So that's what's coming up on the Retirement and IRA Show. Good morning. Good afternoon. This is a pre-recorded show, so we have a little bit of a time confusion here.
We should let everyone know we are recording this like 10 days ahead of schedule.
We are. When the show is airing live on March 19th, right now I'm probably on the beach, personally.
Yeah, you are on spring break.
Yes, I am.
Where are you going?
Cabo San Lucas.
Ah.
Ooh, very nice.
Very nice. So, and Pete, where are you going to be? Because you can't record next week either.
On the 19th. I'll be speaking at a seminar on that morning.
Oh, I thought you were going somewhere for spring break, too.
Oh, no, I'm just going to Windsor and speaking on...
Well, not the same as
there's
Cabo.
There's a beach there, too.
Well, there is, yes. I probably won't be in my bathing suit, at least hopefully not for the attendees. That would be pretty ugly. So, yeah, I'll be there speaking on how to bulletproof your child's inheritance.
Oh, it kind of ties into what we're talking about today.
Yes, it does.
A little bit.
Yep.
But anyways, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show. My name is Jim Saulnier, and seated to the right of me is no one. To the left of me is Chris. But
I'm fascinated that your mind can work that way. He can say to the right of me, but thrust his left hand out.
Yes.
My brain would split in half if I tried to do that. That's kind of like rubbing your tummy and patting your head at the same time.
I can do that.
It takes a little practice.
I can do that. But today is the Retirement IRA Show. We are pre-recorded, so no calls today. And we are also really pre-recording. And the reason I want to mention that is if something major happens between March 8th and March 19th,
you're not going to
hear
about it
on this show because it is pre-recorded. So only once in our career of this did we actually have to pull and come in and do a show. I forget what event that was. Remember?
I don't remember the event, but it was substantial, and it would have been odd for us to play
not,
a show.
Yeah, to not talk about it.
We didn't talk about it.
So it wasn't 9/11 because we weren't even doing the show then.
No.
But it was something. We had pre-recorded a show. This is long before you. This is BP, before Pete.
Yep.
But we had to go in. We had to call in Adrian to come, not Adrian, mm-hmm. It was Micah at the time, to come into the studio live so we could talk about this. So I can't even remember what it was. Wow, it couldn't have been that important then if we can't remember. But at the time,
we're getting old.
Oh, we're getting old, one or the other. But I do want to make mention, we are recording long ahead of time because Chris is on his way to Cabo, and Pete is going to be doing a seminar in his bathing suit.
Yep.
So no one could do the show but me, and because I hardly ever say anything on the shows, I didn't think I could go 2 hours. So we decided to pre-record nearly a week and a half ahead of schedule.
Exactly.
And you are... So,
I'm holding our star.
You're just ready to go put a star on Michigan. So those who listened last week know we answered, 2 weeks ago, we answered an email from a gentleman in Michigan. And he was our first person from Michigan who ever emailed us. So Chris is about, we should have a star posting song,
or
a theme.
Or a drum roll.
A drum roll. Yeah. As Chris is posting a star on the state of Michigan.
I don't really have a drum
roll. We don't have a drum roll.
No, I have this.
Yeah.
Somehow that loses us. Yeah.
Somehow we're putting our listeners to sleep.
But where Michigan is kind of a
he's
weird,
funky two-piece. He's in the southwest corner of Michigan, he said.
South?
West.
West.
Corner of Michigan.
So not too far from Chicago.
Or Indiana.
Or Indiana.
Or the big lake right there.
Well, Michigan's kind of surrounded by big lakes.
Those are great lakes.
Mm-hmm. Well, whatever. Great lake, big lake. You got what I was saying.
Let's see. Probably green will go on there. So I'm going to pick a green star.
And the reason Chris is doing this is behind us. And we always say we're going to get this up on our social media website. Mm-hmm. But we do have a map of the United States. And we're trying to put stars from every iTunian listener who contacts us. And we're definitely the upper... Right,
call that the Northeast.
The Northeast, thank you.
Sure, you have to be from there to know that.
The upper right section of the United States is well served.
There's a lot of folks there.
Well, that could be it. Mm-hmm. Nothing in the West, short of Colorado and California.
It's mostly desert and barren land.
So you're saying we don't have a listener in New Mexico or Arizona
or Nevada nor Utah, apparently.
Well, sooner or later we'll get an email from someone.
Maybe someone from the Northeast will be passing through there on their way to California or something, and they can
email us from their iPad.
From there. Yeah,
on the road in Utah, but we're just trying to fill the state, and I'd say we have a good quarter of all states by now.
I think so.
Chris
I'll
is
count them while you're
Chris
talking.
Is counting.
Yeah, this is not a dead air. Chris is actually counting. With his finger, by the way. He's counting.
He is counting with fingers and toes.
19 states.
19. Oh. 19. Mm-hmm. So that's more than half. More than a quarter.
Mm-hmm. Not more than half.
No. Okay, well, on that geography lesson. So what we're going to talk about today, folks, is Utmas and Ugmas, and we're going to have Pete here to explain those. And then Pete is not only an estate planning attorney who can talk about Utmas and Ugmas. I'm also going to pick his brain on 1099s because he also has his JD in taxation because we're starting to get a lot of 1099 questions, Pete. And a lot of people don't quite know what happens. When is a 1099 issued? Do you get a 1099 if you move an IRA to a 401k? How about an IRA to an IRA and a 401k to an IRA? Well, in some cases, you get 1099s, and in some cases, you don't. So I just want to explain to people when are 1099s issued, when moving retirement accounts, and when aren't they? Because one of the big calls we're getting this time of year is, hey, where's my 1099? I can't do my taxes. And then I have to explain to them, well, in your particular case, no 1099 is issued, and here's why. Okay, and then we've had a few mistakes with 1099s, not from us, but we've helped people navigate what happens when they receive a 1099 that's not right, and how do we fix it. So we're going to cover that in the second half of today's show. But I do want to welcome everybody to the Retirement and IRA Show, and we're going to jump right into Utmas and Ugmas, and let me set the stage of what I'm talking about, and then Pete can inform us what the heck an Utma and an Ugma is. I had a couple come into the office recently, excuse me, and they have told me to please talk about their case, and they're gleefully or anxiously waiting to listen.
You're going to make them wait till the 19th?
I guess I could call them sooner, but maybe I'll make them wait.
It's more dramatic that way.
Yes. Very nice couple. Young, middle-aged, no, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Youngish couple.
Okay.
Late 30s, early 40s. Is that young or is that middle age?
That's definitely young.
Prime age. I don't know.
Prime age. Like primates, they're at prime age.
It's a nice age to be.
I'd like
you're
to
old
be...
enough to be mature, but you're still young enough to be, I don't know, not too old.
I was at a happy hour on Saturday. It was a hiking group in Denver,
aka a search for a companion.
Yes and I did meet mm-hmm. a woman there, but that's nice. Besides the point. Mm-hmm. And when I first got there, there was a guy, you could kind of tell he didn't know anyone. I didn't know anybody, but I can be sociable when I want to be. And we all had name tags on, and I could tell he was kind of standing there alone. And let's just say his name was Mike. It wasn't. So I went up to him, and I says, Mike, how you doing? And I shook his hand. And we started talking. He says, well, you know, I just moved here, and I don't know anybody. I mean, literally, the guy had just moved here from Pennsylvania a couple weeks earlier. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what'd you move out here for? He said, well, I love to hunt. And that was it. Mm. Him and I are off talking about hunting. And he shows me a picture of the elk he got last year before he moved here up in the Winter Park area. And he had this other guy with him. And I says, oh, who's your buddy? He goes, oh, that's my father. I says, oh, that's your father. He says, yeah. He says, and he did really good. He actually kept up with me for an old guy. He's almost 50. And I felt like saying... Excuse me? Yeah. Almost 50? <Yeah. laughs> And here I am standing there as a 52-year-old. So I was actually honored that he thought I was obviously mm-hmm. younger than his dad, who's almost 50, and mm-hmm. I'm pushing 52. So but I also wanted to tell him, you know,
hair.
when you're in your early 50s, you can still hike and hunt. Trust me. But anyway, so this youngish couple came in, and what had happened is they had a four-year-old son and a newborn daughter. Mm-hmm. And prior to the newborn daughter being born, the son inherited some money from the husband's side of the family.
Mm-hmm. The four-year-old?
Yes, mm-hmm. the four-year-old. And they came in and were chatting with me because the money had just come in. And it came in, Pete, as what is known as an Atma. And I'll let you explain what all that means. But they were a little concerned because they were told by the executor of the estate that this money is actually the son's and that the son is going to get access to it at the age of majority. Now, the son is only four. And they were unsure, is the age of majority 18? And I said, well, it's either 18 or 21. But I said, I will talk about this on my radio show. But what they also asked me was, is there any way we can take the money from the Atma that is going to be given to our son at an age that we feel is too young? Because remember, $50,000 over the next 14 years could grow to $100,000 or more thousand, depending on how the investments perform. And they were just worried that the child would be impacted negatively when it comes to student loans, or the child may be impacted negatively if it came to scholarships, or worse, the child would just get the money and blow it. But they didn't quite know how UTMAs worked and if they would have the ability to take it and move it into a different type of account that could protect and alleviate some of their concerns. So I told them, I says, well, you know, what you need is a different type of trust. You need to create a trust that can protect your son's assets and grant you as the parent, who could be trustee of the trust, pretty much full discretion on when the child gets the money. That way, if the child is 18 or 21 and you don't feel responsible enough to get what could be in excess of $100,000, you can control it. But what we have to do is recognize that an Atma account truly is an asset of your child. And you just can't take that Atma account and move it into another account where the child has no access to it unless you say it's okay. I said, but I believe there's going to be a way we could actually legally withdraw money from the Atma if it's being used for the care of the child, and then money that, and you can use that for the child, and money that you would have normally used from your own cash flow to cover that expense that is now being covered by the UTMA, you could direct into this quote-unquote real trust that you can control and keep the child from getting access to long after the age of majority, so long as we do it legally, that the money coming out of the UTMA truly is being used for the benefit of the child, and that you freely take your own assets that you would have used anyways to cover this expense if your child never inherited this money, and you direct that instead into a trust. I said, I think that strategy will work, but I know there's a man who will know for sure if that strategy will work. And that's what I want to talk about today, Pete, is the strategy I laid out for you. Can it work? And if so, how do we do it? And what exactly is an UTMA and an UGMA?
Well, let's start with, now, I don't recall, these are acronyms?
They are, because we pronounce them as a word.
Okay. Now, what was the other choice?
Initialism.
Initialism. So these are acronyms. UGMA, which sounds like quite an ugly word,
yes,
stands for Uniform Gift to Minors Act, which has really been replaced, at least in Colorado since 1984, by UTMAs, which stand for Uniform Transfer to Minors Act. The distinction between the two is that the UGMA was restricted in that you could not leave property to set up an UGMA in a will for a child, whereas with UTMA you can. UGMAs could not hold real estate and a host of other investments, and UTMA is pretty much unrestricted. So they have a lot more versatility, a lot more utility, and very often when a young couple comes in and they have minor children, usually quite young, and they don't want or feel like they can afford the expense of setting up a trust for their children, a lot of times what we'll do is leave everything to the children in an UTMA account, and it has to be separate for each one. You can only have one beneficiary of an UTMA. So if they have two children, they'll have two UTMAs. And then that way the child can receive the property without having to go to court and have a custodian appointed through the court, which is much more expensive. They can leave it in an UTMA account for the child. It can be used for the child's benefit in their early years. And then under Colorado law, the account has to be closed and distributed to the child at age 21, even though age of majority in Colorado is 18.
So did I hear you say that the UTMA could actually be funded via the will, so the UTMA doesn't have to be created ahead of time, or does it get created by wording in the will?
Okay, let me answer that, because there's two answers to that. Yeah. The first is the direct answer, is if in the will it says, I leave the remainder of my estate to my children to be divided equally to them and to be set up in UTMA accounts, then the executor, what we now call personal representative, has the authority to establish those at the time.
Can okay. I interject? This came from a grandparent, so is there any difference?
No. No, so the grandparent in their will or trust could say, I want it to go to these grandchildren, and I want it to be in an UTMA account. The phrasing on it, if you want to be technical about it, although the law doesn't require this technicality, but it should be to, I'll use Jim as an example, to Jim Saulnier as custodian for little Jimmy under the Colorado Uniform Transfer to Minors Act. That's enough to set that up, regardless of whether it's set up during lifetime or through a will, or even a trust can set that up. Now, the second part of that answer is if the executor or the trustee of a trust, say it's coming from a revocable living trust, the trust or the will says, distribute it to my children, and one or more of them happen to be underage, even though the Uniform Transfer to Minors Act is not mentioned in the will or the trust, under Colorado state, and I think pretty much all of the states, because it's a uniform law nationally, they can, on their own, set up an UTMA account as opposed to going through a custodianship through the probate court, which monitors it until they're 18. Mm.
So the grandparent probably did it this way, because if I understand you correctly, you don't need to create a UTMA trust. The UTMA is just an account that operates under certain rules and is probably very low cost, if not free, to establish. Whereas if the grandparent wanted to put controls like the parent now wants to, that would have required an actual trust created by an attorney and a separate expense.
Yes.
So to pass assets on to a child, to a minor, You simply indicate in your will, I want to pass, in this case it was 50,000. I want to pass 50,000 of assets on to, you know, grandchild little Johnny as an Utma.
Yes.
And that's all it has to say. The account gets opened as an Utma, because we can open Utmas. It's very easy, a little checkbox on an application.
Right.
And then the laws of Utma apply. No attorney was ever involved. And it's fairly straightforward and low cost. However, depending on what state the child is in, the child will receive it at a relatively young age. In Colorado, it's age 21, which is still relatively young, especially...
Isn't the UTMA age a national number, or does it vary by state?
It varies by state. Some, I think, still may have 18. It's been a while since I've looked at it on a national basis. However, there's been a movement among the states that allow people to extend that for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And, for example, the state of Washington, which is one I'm familiar with because I used one recently in a probate estate, we established the UTMA account there because under mom's will, she left it to her son, but he was not to get it until age 25, and she named a trust. And we'll get into the income tax aspects, but we set up an UTMA account in state of Washington that extended the distribution date to age 25, was what she had in her will. And because of the income tax issues, that's why we decided to
so
do that.
So could a grandparent in Colorado, as happened in this case, leave $50,000 to an UTMA account that is created in Washington, meaning the Colorado child can't get it at 21. They would have to get it at 25.
It's going to depend on the law of the state. Now, I know about Washington because we looked at it, and Colorado is the same. So they have to have some connection with the state of Washington. So either the transferor, that's the person putting the money into it, or the creator of the UTMA, which very often is the same person. One of those two have to be in that state, the state of Washington, or the minor child has to be in the state, or finally, and this is what we use, the property going in this case it was cash going in, has to be in the state of Washington. So what we did was we located a broker in the state of Washington, gave them the money, they established the account there, and that's how we got it set up.
So the UTMA is opened in the state of Washington.
Yes.
Held at a custodian in the state of Washington.
Right.
Therefore, if this was done here, for the case of this particular couple who came in, if they had done that at the very least, they could have prevented the child from getting it at 21. The child would have got it at 25. And it's just they would have to have dealt, and today with the internet, it's no big deal, but the money is actually custody and held at a custodian in the state of Washington.
Correct. So that met one of the criteria, which is all we needed to meet. So, and the reason we picked Washington is because the state of Washington doesn't have an income tax. So we didn't want to complicate or compound our income tax issues with this by putting it in a state that would have an income tax. So we haven't lost any tax in doing it by virtue of having to pay maybe two states income
tax. So anybody listening, if you are opening an UTMA account, you may want to evaluate what state you want this opened in as compared to your state. So in the case of an UTMA account, and you're going to get into the taxation of this in a minute, well, in the next segment, because we're going to have to break soon. But somebody in, I'm just picking this out of the blue, Colorado, as we're talking about, could open an UTMA account in the state of Colorado for their, in the state of Washington for their child, as long as the assets are custody there, because let's assume that the person donating it or the child is not in Washington. So the money itself is held in Washington. It doesn't have to be distributed to the child until age 25. And between, in this example, between age 4, which is where the son is now, and 25, that trust isn't going to pay any estate tax, state tax either.
State income tax, right.
Even though if it was held in the state of Colorado, it would.
Well, and it will have to pay the state of Colorado income tax because the child resides here. So,
okay.
But it didn't add an extra layer of anything or increase the taxes above Colorado levels.
Exactly, exactly. And that's why we selected Washington.
Okay. Well, when we come back, folks, Chris is going to lead in with a song. He'll tell you why in a minute.
I'm not going to sing the song, though.
Thankfully.
When we come back, Pete is going to expand on UTMAs, how they work, the taxation of them, and describe to us how the parents may be able to get the money legally into a trust with a little bit more protection than right now that the UTMR is offering.
Perfect. So when we come back, we are going to hear the one of the number one songs, or one of the top songs, if you will, in 1935, which is the year that Social Security was created. The hint on this song, it was sung by a person referred to as America's sweetheart of song. So if you know your singers from 1935 real well, Jim, or Pete, you might be able to guess this song. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We will be back right after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Let's take our hearts and dip them in rhyme. Let's learn the words.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is one of the top songs in 1935, the year they started Social Security.
Why does she want to dip her hot in rye?
Rhyme.
I think it's rhyme.
Rhyme?
Yeah, I thought of rye first.
I thought she said rye.
Well, she
was a very popular drink in 1935.
I started listening.
Used as a preservative.
And she's well preserved because she's still singing now.
No, that was "Life Is a Song" by Ruth Edig.
Huh.
Ruth was known as America's sweetheart of song.
Wow,
she had over 60 hit recordings and worked on stage, radio, and film.
Boy, I've never heard that name before.
Nor have I. She was much beloved as a singer and actress in the 20s and 30s, but unfortunately had stumbled into a terrifying relationship.
With who?
She retired in 1937 after a nasty divorce from her first husband, who in a jealous rage attempted to murder the man who was to become her second husband.
So she was cheating.
Oh, get this. Here's a Colorado connection. After remarrying, she relocated happily to Colorado Springs on a farm where she could stay out of the public eye.
Huh.
Oh, Edding's fictionalized story was told in the 1955 film Love Me or Leave Me with Doris Day as the starring role.
Wow.
So if you want to learn about her life, there's a much more modern movie.
Well, it's a fictionalized show.
Well, I know.
Interesting.
Yeah, quite interesting.
Tina does a wonderful job on getting tidbits.
Yeah. It was a very long tidbit, but very.
So why do we do this?
I have no idea. Just to fill a little time at the beginning of every segment?
No. It is our lead-in to our blog post, which will be in the fourth segment of this show, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. The reason we look back 35 years right now, excuse me, not 35 years, the reason we look back to 1935 mm-hmm. is that was the year that the Social Security Act was signed, 1935. Mm-hmm. So that's why we look back initially at 1935. Next segment, you are going to lead in with the number one song in America 40 years ago this week. Mm-hmm. The reason we look back 40 years, when Social Security first came out in 1935, the calculation to determine your benefit, since no one had ever paid in, was based on a concept called 40 elapsed years. And that changed in the 1950s when they started calculating based on 35 computational years. So in the third segment, we give you the number one song in America 35 years ago. And then in the fourth and final segment of the show, Chris is going to lead in with what is actually new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So it's our way of kind of playing a little Social Security game with our listeners.
Yeah, and entertaining us with songs we've never heard before.
Well, they get better. We the next one we've probably have heard.
Definitely.
And then the one 35 mm-hmm. years ago, we definitely have heard because everyone was in this room was around 35 years ago.
And that one we heard last week because it's the same as last week.
Oh, okay. Well, then we definitely will have heard it. Well, Pete wouldn't have.
But there's a new one. Here. For 40 years ago. It's
40 years ago. But I'm sure we have heard it.
Yes.
Because everybody in this room is older than 40. Some barely older, but others quite older.
Those are there that are over 50, is that what you're referring to?
Apparently, I don't look older than 50, though, because I had him fooled.
Oh, that's because you're not showing any gray.
No, I am not.
I disagree.
Well, I said
a little
showing.
A little.
I said
little
showing any. I didn't little. Say he didn't have any.
I have a few little ones growing here and there. Not nearly as many as either of you.
True.
I notice you don't have your goatee anymore.
Sure, I do.
It's just shorter. Don't.
It's just accompanied by
a beard.
More beardish on the side, yeah.
Are you growing a beard, or are you going to go back to the goatee, or are you going to shave it clean?
Apparently, my genes don't promote beard growth, so it will only be this scruffy thing here. That's it.
It doesn't get any longer than that?
It gets longer, but no thicker.
Oh, so it looks silly.
It looks odd, so I have to keep it trimmed.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. So you can't get the stash like Pete has?
No. No. His stash is far more impressive than anything I can produce.
Have you always had that? Well, not always, but for a long time. Ever since I've known you, you've had it.
Yeah, I've had it since probably 73 or 4.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
It's a very long time.
Yeah. I trim it occasionally, so you may have noticed. But
okay.
Once or twice.
So let's get back to UTMAS.
Mm-hmm. Uniform Transfer to Minors Act.
Yes.
Exactly. And to give newer listeners an update, what had happened is somebody came into the office recently, and the grandparent of their four-year-old had passed. I believe it was the mother of the father.
So the paternal grandmother.
Correct. And had left the grandchild $50,000 in an UTMA account. And as Pete just explained in the previous segment, UTMAs are very, very easy to establish. They can be established in a will. So we don't know because we haven't seen the grandmother's will, but perhaps she just created it in a will or in a revocable living trust document where it simply said, give $50,000 of assets to my grandson via an UTMA account or something similar to that. They're that easy to establish.
The UTMA could also be funded prior to the grandmother's passing.
Correct.
As well.
You
That's
don't have
option.
To wait.
You don't
yes,
have to wait.
You don't have to wait. But what it essentially is an asset of the child. The parents, in this case, the people who are in my office, merely oversee it as custodians for the child. But it has to be used for the benefit of the child, and it has to be given to the child at the age of majority. And in the state of Colorado, Pete explained, that is age 18. However, there's a special rule preventing the child from getting money in an UTMA account until 21. And although 21 is older than 18, it's still an age where youngins may not make wise decisions with money that is handed to them. And their concern was the $50,000 grows because it's still the child is only 4 now. So there's still going to be 17 more years before 21. And their concern was the $50,000 maybe grows to $100,000 or $150,000. We don't know, or stays at 50 or drops. It could do anything. But the chances of it growing over 17 years is fairly certain if they invested it. So they were concerned and were wondering, is there a way we can get money from the UTMA and do something else with it so it's not in the child's name? We can control it, and we can control it longer, past age 21, and give it to our child if and when we feel he is mature enough for it. And I said, well, there may be a way to do it by simply legally taking money out of the UTMA and moving it into a new trust that you create. Now, you can't literally take it from the UTMA and move it into the trust. The money has to come out of the UTMA and be used for the child's benefit. But if you timed it and just took money from the UTMA to use it for the child's benefit by purchasing items or services that you would have normally paid for anyways, you can take money out of your cash flow. And instead of buying that product or service, you put it into the trust, and the UTMA buys the product or service. The net result is the child still has money in a trust. It's just now it is in a trust that isn't the child's asset and could be held longer past 21 if you want it. I said, but I'm not sure you can do that. I said, on paper, it sounds good to me, but I will find out from someone who knows a heck of a lot more in estate planning than I do, and that's you, Pete. So the scenario that I described, is it doable?
It is doable. The standard for the, let's say the parent is the custodian, is the money has to be spent for the best interest of the child. So we talked a little bit earlier, and we've talked in prior shows, about trust very often have a standard for health education and maintenance, health education, maintenance, and support of the beneficiary. That is not the standard for the UPMA. It's in the best interest of the child.
So, which is a lower standard.
It sounds like, I was going to say, it sounds like a lower standard, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's low enough that Black 39 in Vegas.
That would not work.
The roulette wheel,
yeah.
Putting all $50,000 on Black 39. So the parents still can't take the money out and gamble it away or buy things for their benefit.
Or there was a case where there's very few court cases on UTMA accounts, even though they've been around since 1984. The parent, they were going through a divorce, and that's how these cases arise. And the father had taken the money in the UTMA for one of the kids and invested a good portion of it in the penny stock market back in the 80s. And, of course, didn't do very well. Of course, he used his own money to do that. And the standard for investments with an UTMA account is the same standard that you would use in caring for or managing the property of another. The prudent investor or the prudent person rule, which is what we see with trust. It's a different standard, and it says that that standard is applied regardless of any other standards that are out there. So it is what someone would do in the management of someone else's money. And the court found that if he were managing someone else's money, they wouldn't have put it in the penny stock market, even though he put his own money into it. But that was not the standard. So it's a much lower standard in terms of what they can use or invest the funds in. And so that's different than the other use for the best interest of the child, which are distributions coming out. But what also it says in the statute is that those distributions can be made without regard to the duty or ability of the custodian personally or anyone else to support the minor. Now, parents have a duty of support to their minor children. However, under the statute, the distributions to or for the benefit of the minor can be made regardless of that responsibility. However, in the divorce setting, which is where all these court cases come from, or what few we have, is if a minor child, is the beneficiary of an UTMA, it doesn't relieve the non-custodial parent from the duty of paying child support. So, and that's in the context where these come up.
So,
I think in your situation, if the parents are using the funds in the UTMA for the care of the child, medical bills, what have you, that's their duty to do that under the law. The only result or possible challenge to that is when the child turns 14 or 21, they could come back and say, well, wait a minute, you had a duty to support me and you used that instead. So they could be challenged.
I would think even with that wording, though, couldn't a person make a case that in the best interest of the child, protecting them from themselves at age 21, that putting this money in this alternative trust would be better in the long-term interest of the child? And couldn't they just move the $50,000 over there? And I guess the question would be if it ever got challenged, it may or may not hold up. But in the best interest of the child seems flexible enough that you could reasonably argue that that action would be in the best interest of the child.
Well, keep in mind that the funds in the UTMA are irrevocably owned by the minor. So you're taking money out of their pocket and sending it somewhere else without their consent. So I think while that argument certainly is in the best interest standard says how they can spend the money. It doesn't authorize them to take money from the child and put it into the trust. And knowing what I was like at 21, that would have been in my best interest had I had any money.
And that's what I was trying to explain to this couple. We just can't move the money from the UTMA and put it in a trust with better protections. But I believe we can get the money out of the UTMA. I didn't realize it was as low a standard as you described. I said, I believe we can get the money out of the UTMA. And then you as a parent just simply take your own money that you would have, had that UTMA not existed, that you would have used to buy that computer or that laptop or the clothes or the schooling or the tutor. That you would have spent your own money anyways, and you take that money and instead put it in the trust. The net result is your son still has the money. It just came out legally.
So over the next 10 years or so, gradually,
yeah, that's what they were going to do.
UTMA and fill up the
That was
trust.
Our thought, and I said, let me talk to Pete. You would create the trust now, for lack of a better term, let's call it the real trust or a trust with control. And over the next decade or so, I said, begin taking money from the UTMA legally at this much lower legal standard you said now. And clearly the statute says the parents can take the money out for the child's needs, even if they have the financial means of providing for the child. The parent can still take money out of the UTMA. So that to me is an even lower hurdle. And then in the same time, begin directing money into the quote-unquote real trust for the child that will... And when I say that, I'll have Pete explain. It just gives the parent more opportunity to say, you know what? I don't want my son getting this at 21. He has a drug problem. Or, my God, he's in a terrible relationship. Or he's being sued. Or something is going on. And you just don't want them to get the money right away. And my question will be, who checks on why money is being removed from the UTMA? Is there anyone or no one? Does the IRS audit them? Who checks to make sure the parent is not taking it and going and put it on Black 39 in Vegas?
Well, and that was going to take me to the comment I wanted to make. So let me answer that question and then come back to the more practical aspects of this. The only person to challenge would be the minor child. Or a soon-to-be ex-parent, or child, I should say, or ex-spouse. So, as I mentioned earlier, where the few cases that we have on this topic come out of divorces where one parent is challenging the other on the use of the money, that sort of thing. But so there's really just the child. And so the practical side of that, let's use your example, Jim. So the child is 4 years old. So by the time the child turns 14, the UTMA account is gone. The same $50,000 is over in the trust for the child. The child will never, ever know that there was an UTMA account or that there was even any possibility of receiving those funds by the time they turn 21. So as a practical matter, the parents have done it, and I would advise doing it legitimately, as you suggest. But bottom line is if the child doesn't know it existed because it's exhausted by the time they would receive it at age 21, then...
When does the child get told they have an UTMA? 14? You seem to be fixating on 14.
Well, the reason I fixate on 14, because under the statute at age 14, the child has certain rights in that if there is if the custodian dies, resigns, and there's a vacancy, the child can appoint within the family or a trust company, can appoint the replacement or successor custodian. Prior to that, then, the transferor, the person putting money in, or the creator of the account can name the successor custodian.
So outside of that, when does the child get told, or do you just wait to 21 and
when
tell
them? When the parent tells them.
Or when the parent tells
them. And the parent tells them. Or now,
doesn't tell
now, of course,
them.
If,
or doesn't, yeah.
If the child on their income, if they're filing their own income tax return, then there's an election the parents can make up to certain dollar amounts just to report the child's income on their tax return. Anything over that needs to be filed a separate tax return. And so if the child sees the interest, dividends, et cetera, from this account on their tax return, they may ask about it.
Okay. Interesting. So nobody is really checking, though. The parents, do they have to maintain receipts? Do they have to document? Do you recommend they do in case the kid wants to come after them at 21? Mad, he can't get his money. Let's say he does have a drug addiction problem, and he realizes, my God, if my parents didn't do this, I could have had 50K or more if it grew, do they need to maintain receipts of what they use the money for?
Absolutely. There's a part of the statute is that they're required to account for, if asked, and at 14, the child can demand an accounting of where all the money went and what they used it for. So, yes, they absolutely need to keep accurate records of the use and expenditures that they've used the money for.
So would food, clothing, utilities, technology all be...
Summer camp,
all be legitimate reasons for taking money out of an UTMA?
They are, but remember that they have a duty independent, the parents have a duty independent of the UTMA to support their child. So the child could, for the food, clothing, shelter, could come back and say, wait a minute, you had a duty anyway. This relieved you of that duty. You need to replace that. Summer camp, no, they don't have a duty to send the child to summer camp.
And by technology.
Right, exactly. So if they want to be cautious, I would suggest that they use it on those extras, which, of course, kids, you know, it doesn't take long.
Now, how about it's Christmas time, the kid is 11, still doesn't know he has this UTMA, and they want to buy him a new bicycle that costs $1,500, just making these numbers up.
Sure.
Now, at Christmas, the parents would probably be willing to use their own money, but could they take $1,500 from the UTMA, save the receipt, buy the bike, but then take $1,500 from their own account and put it in the trust? Is buying a bike something for the benefit of the child?
Sure.
Something like that. Okay. So
so it
wouldn't be
extras.
Hard to do. Yeah.
No. Especially with $50,000, if you're taking at least, you know, 10 years, that's only $5,000 a year, give or take, because the account might grow a bit. But I think it's pretty easy to justify extras beyond basic housing and food.
And let me suggest, this issue is a hot topic for discussion, and I get, not so much anymore since 529 accounts have come into play, but I used to get at least one to three calls a year. Grandparents have set up UTMA accounts for their grandchild, and now the grandchild's turning 21, and they don't like what's going on in the grandchild's life. What can we do? Well, there's very little you can do. But some of the things that can be done is moving the money into a 529 plan. Now, at 21, the child owns that 529 plan.
Yeah, that's a little different. Yeah.
Move into an IRA. Well, do you know the child at 21 owns the IRA? Doesn't hinder that. One of the suggestions that there's controversy over whether it's appropriate or not is to invest in a limited partnership that perhaps the family has invested in. The UTMA owns a limited partnership interest, which has all kinds of restrictions on sale, transfer, that sort of thing. Some of the commentators suggest that's a breach of the duty of the parent or the custodian, which isn't always the parent. And others say, no, that's probably okay. So I would cautious on that technique. But that issue comes up. The other is the use of a 2503C trust. The 2503C comes from the Internal Revenue Code. It's what we used to use prior to 529s, where they can set up a trust for the minor child. They don't have to make any distributions, but it's usually intended to pay for education. But what the trust says is at age 21, they get the money. However, in the trust, very often what we would do is give the grandchild, the 30 days in which to demand their money out of the trust. If they don't demand it within that 30 days, then the trust locks down and the money's in the trust forevermore or whatever the terms of the trust are. The key is to distract the child for that 30 days. You have to tell them, and I suggested they send them an all-expense-paid trip to Europe for 30 days, and then when they come back, the time's expired.
But is it really necessary for, like, could we not just open this quote-unquote real trust, a different type of trust where the parent has discretion on when the money is issued? We're not going to have to send the kid away to Europe for 30 days and things like that.
Well, that's if you're thinking about it with some time. He's mentioning the grandparents are calling when the kid is approaching the age of 21, and now they're in a pickle.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that gets beyond. That's a different topic for today's discussion.
Well, it is, but I wanted to cover. I like your approach to it, but if people are a little concerned about being challenged later on what they spend the money on, or they're backed into a corner on it, these are some of the other techniques that get used to delay the receipt, the unrestricted receipt of the money by the child or grandchild.
Okay. And again, that was what this couple was worried about. It could very well turn out that their son is wonderful at 21, and they closed the quote-unquote real trust. But they weren't too keen on 50,000 grown to 150,000 in 17 years, or more or less. We don't know what it would grow to. But and then the child just getting it. So it sounds to me like they will be able to do the strategy I described, and just work with a good attorney to create this quote-unquote real trust.
And keep receipts.
And keep receipts, right, exactly. Yeah.
Well, when we come back, I think let's just touch on the income tax aspects and where UTMAs may have greater utility than we have used them prior. Just briefly talk about that, and then
absolutely.
I think we can move to your 1099s.
Well, if we don't get to the 1099s this week, we can get to it next week. There's there's got plenty more weeks in front of us.
True. So we're coming up to our next break here on the Retirement and IRA Show. When we come back, we're going to hear the number one song this week in 1976, which is 40 years ago this week. The title of this week's song consists of a month and a year. So that should give it away if you're familiar with songs of 1976. But we'll find out what that is when we come back from this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Ooh, I know it.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That was the number one song this week 40 years ago in 1976. A song I think pretty much everyone has heard, almost regardless of birth date. I'm sure my 8-year-old hasn't heard it before. But
well, they weren't alive in 63. So.
No, but this song played in 1976. So
yeah.
I think there's a lot of kids even born in the 1980s that have probably heard this at times when their parents listened to it. But that was, in fact, December 1963, Oh, What a Night is the full title. Most people remember just as Oh, What a Night, but the official title is December 1963.
And the artist?
Sung by Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
There we go.
So,
and I apologize for blurting out.
People may not have heard you because the lady talking might have been loud enough.
What happens with the new...
You get so excited.
I do. With the new part of our show, the improved production value, I guess you could say. We now play little snippets of, what would you call those? We have a voiceover woman who talks about us. Apparently, while she's talking, I can't.
Which is very difficult for Jim, by the way.
That anything I say during that time is actually being heard. So I'm glad I came to that conclusion by blurting out just a song instead of something else.
We are, too.
True. It could have been worse. could have been worse, yes.
So you may have heard me blurt out. Actually, I tried singing the song, not really blurting out the name.
That was singing?
That was singing, yeah.
Wow.
I refer to it as a blurt myself.
Yeah.
No, that was me singing.
We'll go back and review the tapes on that one.
But maybe people can call in after they've heard it.
You go back and listen. That was clearly.
I'll have to listen.
Clearly. A very talented person singing.
I have to edit this mess when we're done.
That was a very talented person singing is what that was. Yeah. Who didn't realize he was being recorded.
But now does.
But now I know. So when she's talking, I'm not.
Perfect.
Okay.
Where do you get those little miniature soda cans?
It's a thing called a grocery store. They actually sell all sorts of food products.
The last I checked, though, those little mini ones cost the same as the regular sized ones.
They do, but it's called portion control.
See, last time I saw those was in the nursing home. They have those there. So
I think that's big to give them a better chance of gripping the can.
Perhaps for the older people, but
well,
for someone
those over 50, you know, they need that help.
For someone as young and virile as me,
well, you are.
I can hold the can.
You have AARP, have you not?
I have not.
Well, I thought you were going to join it for the discounts.
Absolutely not. Well, their stance on Social Security has ruined it for me. But
you are old enough. You qualify.
Technically speaking, I don't look it. We've proven that.
They don't check that, though. They just check your true age.
I had this kid fooled. He was telling me about his dad, who's almost 50.
Mm-hmm. The ignorance of youth.
My mother was telling me, she was talking with Evan recently. Mom opened up a little retirement account for Evan through a certain type of annuity. I don't want to get into what Mom did, but she was telling him, Evan, when you're 55, you'll get it. Now, Evan at the time was 24, and he goes, 55? I'll almost be dead. And as a 52-year-old, I want to vehemently argue that point with him. Evan is my nephew, for those who don't know. So when I go home in May, I'm going to cue him in on what quote-unquote almost dead means. It does not mean 55. Maybe to a 24-year-old does. Yeah. Okay. Right.
So we wanted to touch on the income tax. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tax ramifications of the UTMAs that we've been describing.
Right, because we always say the UTMA, or we have been saying the UTMAs for the benefit of the child, UTMAs for the benefit of the child. Pretty much anybody knows when you open an account, it's really for the benefit of you and your silent partner. And your silent partner can become a very unsilent partner if he feels he is being cheated. And he, in this case, is your uncle.
Yes.
And not the uncle that Evan has to deal with in May, which would be me, but the uncle otherwise known as Uncle Sam.
Wearing his IRS badge and gun.
Yes. Correct. So how does Uncle Sam get his grubby little claws on your child's UTMA account or the quote-unquote real trust that we're trying to create to protect the child from himself at the age of majority? How does the IRS get their share?
Well, the UTMA account is under the child's Social Security number. So the 1099s, which we'll get to in a little bit, are going to be issued.
Maybe.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay. So they're going to be, the 1099s are going to be issued in the child's custodial account, that is the UTMA account, but it's going to have the child's Social Security number on it. So it needs to be reported as income of the child. As I mentioned earlier, up to certain dollar amounts, the parents can just include that on their income tax return. But if the income is over that amount, then the child will have to file a separate tax return. And, of course, we have a thing called the kiddie tax. And that's not kittens, that's child kiddies. And that means that the child pays income tax on the unearned income over a threshold amount, the exclusion amount, that's going to be at the parent's highest marginal rate. So it's just kind of tacked on top of the parents for purposes of calculating. But the real trust, as Jim refers to it, will pay income tax at the maximum income tax rate once it exceeds $12,400 this year. So the use of the UTMA, if the person setting it up, transferor, decides that maybe age 21 or maybe in some cases age 25, depending on where the account's set up, they can save a substantial amount of income taxes by doing that, having a child at the taxed at the child's rate or at the parent's marginal rate, depending on the age of the child, rather than the maximum rate on anything, which is close to 50%, by the way, anything over the $12,400. So a lot of times what we're starting to look at now is the utility of that. If you have responsible children, who are approaching adulthood, you're not concerned about trying to provide them with protection, which is, most of us do want to protect our children, and especially what we leave them. So the UPMA account is getting a renewed vigor in this income tax environment.
So there's a bit of a trade-off. The UPMA has some tax advantages because of the way the income is treated with regard to the child, whereas the other option, putting it in one of these more controlling trusts, has the protection issue, but possibly could be subject to higher tax burden.
Right, and we've developed, I say we, there's a national group of us developed a way to transfer some of that income tax burden to the beneficiary of the real trust without actually distributing the money. And so it gets real technical, but nonetheless, we've come up with something that we're using now.
But in this case, with just $50,000 to keep costs low, because we talked about the UTMA is created just by saying this is an UTMA, and
right.
Boom, it is. Whereas the quote-unquote real trust, as the parents start taking money from the UTMA legally and putting or replacing it with money from their own cash flow into the trust, that needs to be created by an attorney. So there's a cost there.
There is.
But I also want to point out that the money going into the quote-unquote real trust is not taxed at these high tax rates. It's the earnings that that money may generate. So in the case that we've been talking about for the past hour on the show, if the parents got the $50,000 in right away, if they could, and let's just say it did, and let's just say by some stroke of genius, they had an investment in there paying 10% interest per year, which is outrageous. I agree, but I'm just trying to keep easy calculation here. It's generating $5,000 of income every year. It is that $5,000 that would be subject to these high tax rates, not the $50,000. And in this particular case, $5,000 is no way near the $12,400 you said?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the threshold.
The $12,400 threshold. So even though there'll be some taxes, it's not going to be that onerous nearly 50% rate, because $5,000 is not $12,400 yet.
It's only... still likely will be at a higher rate
right.
than if it were taxed to the child.
Correct. So that would be the cost of control is the taxes. But there's also ways within trusts, without using some of the fancy things you came up with for higher net worth people, you can purchase a tax-deferred annuity inside the trust, and that will keep the income from being passed on. You could buy municipal bonds if you wanted to, or you can buy actual investments. But they offer investments that are called tax-managed investments. They generally are being managed to not give off any type of taxable income throughout the year, that their return is being driven more by the capital appreciation of the asset, which wouldn't be realized until it's sold. So keep in mind, under that, the income could then, if you sold the asset and pass it on to the child, the way the tax returns actually work, the trust would receive an offsetting deduction for the money passed to the child, and now the money is actually being taxed at the child's tax rate. So we don't expect people to follow that whole thing we just described. The point is, if done properly, these high tax rates can be minimized or avoided.
Well, and let me point out one thing, and it's as a compliment to you, Jim. In my work with various advisors over the years, there's very few that really actually understand the taxation of trusts and recognize and appreciate the advantage of managing the investments inside of the trust to be tax efficient in this new environment. So hats off to you for being knowledgeable and on top of it, which is typical of my observation.
I had my headphones off. What'd you say again?
Well, I wasn't listening to what I said. You expect me to listen to what I say?
Could you repeat that four times over while looking at Chris? I do appreciate that. Thank you. Okay.
Well, and that's, you know, taxes in general, just outside of this issue, you can't ignore taxes. There are a lot of things.
Well, you can. You just go to jail. Just ask that.
Well, true.
Isn't there that famous actor there? What's his name?
I'll never forget.
Several,
what's his name.
Probably.
Remember he went to jail?
Wesley Snipes?
Wesley Snipes, yes. Yeah.
Well, and Willie Nelson had a little issue.
He was just stoned. Issues. He didn't know what he was doing.
Well, that's true. And that's unfortunately for him, not a defense. But
Willie Nelson had tax trouble too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He had that ranch up in Evergreen, IRS, I think, ended up with.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So.
He didn't go to jail like Wesley?
No, I think he had.
I think he skirted that.
Yeah, he did.
I think. Wesley did not have an attorney as good as.
Apparently.
Okay.
But the point I was trying to make was that there's a lot of things you can't control in your life, particularly your retirement life, how your investments are going to do, what interest rates are going to be in any given year, whether you're going to have a job or not have a job. There's a lot of things uncontrollable by you. You just have to accept. But one thing you can a lot of times control are tax events. And having some forward thinking in this regard can absolutely impact something like your retirement. So people, no matter who you're working with, make sure that taxes, not just this year's taxes, but taxes over your life, really, as much as can be predicted, are taken into consideration when making decisions on what you do. Because sometimes the benefits, the pure benefits of an act might simply be tax benefits. And if you're not paying attention to it, you'll miss out.
So. Absolutely. Okay, one other thing we'll get to. I don't know if we'll get to our 1099 topic yet again. But let's talk about college. How are the UTMIS, or the quote-unquote real trust, going to impact the child's ability, perhaps, under current laws? We know things are going to change over the next 14 years. And the reason I'm fixating on 14 years is the child in our example that we're using is 4 years old. So what are the, not tax implications, but what are the, what do you call them, FASI?
FAFSA.
FAFSA. FAFSA. FAFSA.
FAFSA.
That's a hot initialism. Oh, would that be an acronym?
That's an acronym because we pronounce it FAFSA.
You would say FAFSA?
I wouldn't quite say it that way.
We would say FAFSA, yes.
I wouldn't even try to say it. That is the student aid application, right?
Right, it's the federally based application that's filled out to determine the estimated family contribution, or EFC, which is the driving force, really, in financial aid decisions at universities and colleges.
So, Pete, how would the UTMA be treated on this FAFSA
on this application?
Mm-hmm. On this application.
And how would the real trust be treated?
Well, under the FAFSA, it is owned by the student, in this case, the child.
The UTMA.
The UTMA is owned by the child under their Social Security number, so it's an asset that they own as well as any other. And I think Chris had the amount.
And how would that be impacted, Chris?
Well, the assets of the child and assets of the parents are both included. You supply those on the application, and they both contribute to their determination of the estimated family contribution. In other words, how much you're expected to come up with out of your own pocket before financial aid kicks in. And student assets, the assets of the child, the applicant, are included at the rate of 20%. 20% are expected to be contributed to their education, whereas parental assets are only expected to be contributed at the rate of 5.6% under current law. So the same asset, whether it's owned by the parents or the child, can impact very differently the estimated family contribution for the student.
But on the real trust, Pete, and by real trust, what we're talking about is it is a trust that will receive the $50,000. I get it that the UTMA is considered an asset of the child. That's pretty obvious. But if the parents did succeed over the next 14 years on moving the 50 to a quote-unquote real trust, and the child is the beneficiary of that trust, and the parents are the trustees, who owns it?
Well, I think that's going to be considered. If the parents are the trustees, I think that's going to pull it into the FAFSA form.
And but as a parental asset, right. Not the child's asset. Yeah. Just because you're the beneficiary doesn't mean you're the owner of the asset.
Provided it's discretionary. Now, if it has forced distributions, that is, all income gets distributed to the child, then that's going to hit on the child's side in terms of what the income is, but not the underlying asset itself.
Okay. Okay, so
But here's, keep in mind that at least so far, my understanding is if the asset is owned by the grandparents, such as, say, the grandparents set the trust up, then it's not disclosed on the FASFA form, and so it doesn't impact that.
That's true.
For 529s, for example, they've been threatening to change that, but I think so far, if the grandparents set up the 529 plan and they retain ownership of it, even though the grandchild is the beneficiary, it doesn't get reported on the FASFA form for qualification for student aid.
No. Plus, I think the main reason is because that beneficiary can be changed.
Yes.
It doesn't have to go to that child at any time. The maker of that 529 can change the beneficiary to someone else. So it's an asset, if it were thought of as such, for the child that could disappear and be given to someone else.
Unless it's a custodial 529, and I know we're getting way beyond the scope of today's conversation, but all too often I do see parents move UTMA accounts to 529s. But now that has to legally be disclosed to the 529 custodian as a custodial 529 because it came from an UTMA. And it does become an asset, and it is considered an asset of the child. So when you change beneficiaries, you now get into gifting issues, that so, the child is now gifting because it's his asset.
And Pete and I discussed this a little bit before we started the show.
Oh, we did?
That there's a couple of ways for these funds to go from the UTMA to a 529, and maybe this is a great time for you to expand
on
that.
Sure. When Chris and I were talking, because he asked that question.
Was this when I was at Starbucks?
No, you were getting your Chipotle still.
Well, I went to Chipotle, then Starbucks.
What time were you at Starbucks? We could probably narrow it down.
It was prior to your entrance to this room.
11:54, actually.
Okay. Yes, that's right in the middle of our conversation.
Yeah. So I was at Starbucks. Okay. Gotcha. Okay, gosh. This is why this is all privy to me.
Yes. I'm glad we settled that because we were wondering just exact location. We need to just put a bell around your neck so we can figure out where you are.
A little cowbell?
Those GPS
so you'll
bells.
Hear me walking down the hall?
Right, exactly. So when Chris and I were talking, the custodian of the UTMA account is free to set up a 529 that is owned by the UTMA account. That's not an issue. The investment discretion with the custodian is pretty wide open. So that's not an issue. If we wanted to move the money out of the UTMA account and set up a 529 that was controlled by somebody other than the student, the child, then we're looking at having to use that technique, Jim, that you suggested is where we drain that out and then the parents set it up, or the grandparents for that matter, would set it up with equivalent funds.
So the custodial 529 that you're talking about is simply a 529 that's held in the UTMA account. So it hasn't left the UTMA. It's still there for the benefit of the child, owned by the child. So you'd have to break free of that.
Right, but it removes a lot of the flexibility that parents like about 529s. I'll name my other child as beneficiary. Right. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about these gifting issues and all this other stuff that you would with a custodial 529.
You would, because it belongs to the child, which means it removes the ability to change the beneficiaries. It also requires that 529 be distributed to the child when they turn 21.
Right. So there's no delaying it past that.
Right.
One of the things we like about 529s is because parents will have to say, well, what if my child doesn't go to school? What if he or she gets a scholarship? He or she goes to a trade school, or he or she joins the military and it's paid for, or any other reason they don't go to college. And I say, well, no problem. Yeah. You change the beneficiary to yourself and you go take a class somewhere, or just change it, leave it in the child's name. You don't have to distribute it. There's no RMDs. There's no required distributions on a 529. And then when you are a grandparent someday, your child now has children, you name the grandchild as beneficiary. All the while, that 529 asset is growing 100% tax deferred, possibly 100% tax free if ultimately it is used for a education of a family member.
And they could name another one of their children who maybe
absolutely if they have another child.
Yeah.
They could name their favorite financial advisor.
I don't think so.
Well, they could.
You're not related. You have to be related.
they could adopt their favorite financial advisor.
Yes, they could. Yes. They certainly
legally.
Could. Yes, legally.
And then name that rather youthful-looking 52-year-old favorite financial
advisor.
Are
you looking to go back to school, Jim? Is that what you're saying?
I'm speaking hypothetically.
Yes. That hypothetical 52-year-old.
Youthful-looking 52-year-old.
Oh, yeah, well, you'd have to be.
Yes.
Although there is such thing as an adult adoption.
There is. But you cannot inherit under the intestacy laws if you're adopted prior or after age 18.
Really?
Yeah, I had a client who was worried that her husband would, after she died, would adopt his girlfriend, and then the girlfriend would then be able to receive.
Wait a minute, she was married to the guy? She knew he had a girlfriend?
Yeah, she didn't seem to be particularly upset about it, which kind of surprised me, but she was very matter-of-fact about it. I thought, oh, okay, well, we'll...
So her concern was her husband, who she knew had a girlfriend, he would adopt his girlfriend?
After
this,
she passed.
This just
so
sounds
maybe
weird.
Maybe after the current wife passed away, she would then adopt the girlfriend, causing her to then be in line
to receive assets of the wife.
Rather than the wife's children. That sort of thing. Interesting.
There's got to be a law against adopting your girlfriend as your child.
Yeah, I think.
At least in the eyes of the good Lord, there's got to be a law.
Once the adoption takes place, then certain activities must cease.
Yes. I would say yes. But anyways, you were saying, now that I'm intrigued.
Disturbing story.
So obviously, the legislator or legislation or someone thought of this.
Oh, yeah.
Because they
most of these laws occur because someone tried it, and someone realized we don't want to allow this to happen.
Or they tried it and then just found out it was illegal, so then they made a major contribution to the election of the legislator, and then, of course, the law then got
became
passed.
Favorable. Yes.
Interesting. Interesting, the things we learned. So, to summarize for the people who are going to be listening to this specifically for this ATMA discussion, what we described earlier can legally, safely be done. Do you have any idea what it would cost in very roundabout numbers for very simplified, no advanced planning, quote-unquote, real trust?
Well, our price range, and this doesn't speak for everyone, it's probably somewhere between $2,500 to $3,500 is what our range is. And, of course, our trusts go up beyond that depending on what needs to be done, but that would... Probably
so it's more expensive, obviously, than the ATMA, but has a lot more flexibility and protection.
Yeah, well, the ATMA doesn't cost anything to set
up. Right, that's what I'm saying, a lot more money than the ATMA.
It's tough to beat zero.
Exactly.
So that music means we're approaching our final break here on the Retirement and IRA Show. When we come back from this short break, we're going to hear the number one song from 35 years ago in 1981. This song was written for a comedy film about working women back in 1981. So we'll find out what that is after this break. This is the Retirement and IRA Show. Thanks for joining us. Stick with us because this break will be a short one.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets, the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5.
Well, thanks for sticking with us through that break. If you did, welcome to you. If you're fresh from this break, this is the Retirement and IRA Show. And we came back from that break hearing the number one song from 35 years ago this week in 1981. That, of course, is Dolly Parton with 9 to 5. Was that written specifically for the movie?
Or I
was the song
so.
Out? And then
I would think so.
I think so, too. Let me read the notes here.
Yes.
Returning to the number one position after a couple weeks off is 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton. The film 9 to 5 was Dolly Parton's film debut. She wrote the song while the movie was in production.
There you go.
So it was. 9 to 5 became a huge crossover hit for Parton. I don't find that to be country-ish at all.
I think it's a fun song.
It is quite a fun song. It's a fun movie, too.
I missed the movie, but
I think I
was working during that time.
Were you washing dishes?
Yeah, probably was.
that's an inside joke, those of you who don't know. That's what Pete was doing during Woodstock.
Yes.
But you were physically close to Woodstock, were you not?
Oh, I was in Cape Cod washing dishes. So, I mean,
quite close.
Well, we drove, you said the story before, but we were traveling. There was two buddies of mine. We were on the road, and we heard about this big party concert in New York, and we were in upstate New York, and we said, let's just go to Massachusetts.
State to go to.
Yes.
Better clam chowder there, anyway. Yes.
And Woodstock wasn't a big thing.
No. It turned out to be pretty much a
most
flop.
People don't
just
even
a passing fad.
They don't even remember it. They don't even.
Well, if you were there, you probably don't. Yeah, there's a lot of us who remember stories about it now. But
well, what's the expression? If you lived through the '60s, or was it? If you remember the '60s, you weren't there.
You weren't there, right? So yes. Anyway, this is the Retirement and IRA Show. What do we want to get into now, Jim?
What's new on helpofmysocialsecurity.com? Oh, that's why we did all this.
Really? What's new? That's a good time in the show for that.
Yes.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
The hilarious part about playing this is we have absolutely no idea what will be new on helpofmysocialsecurity.com.
We don't.
Because it will not be recorded for two more days.
Oh. So what might be on helpofmysocialsecurity.com?
Well, there's some groundbreaking, earth-shattering, interstellar consequences changes that may or may not come to pass over the next 9 days. And if they do, I'll report on them and you'll hear about them.
I don't know of these major consequential changes that are coming.
I didn't say are coming. I said may or may not come to pass. If nothing really happens, then it'll be something boring.
So in other words, you have no clue.
Correct.
Okay.
I tried to say that at the beginning.
Yeah, but you're not going to let him get by with it, are you?
No.
What's new, pussycat?
Well, that was an easy update.
It was.
Why don't we explain why you have no clue?
I said at the beginning that today, it happens to be, for us recording it, today is March 8th. This will play live for the first time on March 19th. We're having to do that due to accommodating some vacations and that sort of thing.
So we're talking about what's new on Help My Social Security from the 22nd.
No. It would be what's new on helpofmysocialsecurity.com that would have been released on the 16th.
16th, okay.
The 16th will be recorded.
8 days from now.
2 days from now.
2 days
on the 10th.
From now. Okay.
This is too confusing.
It is. So by the 10th, I'll be able to answer the question. Today on the 8th, I cannot.
Gotcha.
That's the issue.
Okay.
Clear as mud, as you say.
Never mind. Sorry I asked.
That's okay.
Okay, so have we covered, in your professional opinion, Pete, everything about UTMAs and UGMAs? Or is there more you want to mention?
I think that we have covered it adequately, and no sense beating a dead horse, as they say, or some people say here.
So some people say it that way. Others choose not to. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's the ASPCA-approved way of saying it.
For those who don't know, I occasionally say we beat that horse to death instead of apparently beating a horse that's already dead, which to me seems like a worthless waste of time. The animal's already dead.
That's the point.
Well, so is he beating it to death. It's redundant. You just talked about something so much, the horse died.
That's an approach where you're describing something that's so boring to listen to that someone passes. Is that kind of what you're...
Well, in this case, the horse.
Why would he be listening to the radio in the first place?
He's
that's what
not.
I'd like to know.
Someone else is.
But why would they beat a horse because they're bored to death?
Because you just beat it to death. You just kept beating it.
Seems like an aggressive reaction to something one hears on the radio.
I think that was the first muff up I did, and you and
no, it was not.
I think it was.
No, I know the first one because I remember it clearly, like it was yesterday.
What was the first muff up?
Tout your own horn was your first one.
And I'm telling you, tout your horn is an East Coast thing.
Negative. Just because you came from the East Coast doesn't mean it's an East Coast thing. That's a Jim thing. Even your mother doesn't say it that way.
Mom does.
No, she confirmed she did not. I'm pretty sure.
She was drunk.
Hi, Mom.
We toot horns, and it is kind of obnoxious to toot one's own horn. That's why we're going to toot our own horn, brag about oneself. how do you tout a horn? Those of you who have been listeners since day one on the Retirement and IRA show have heard this conversation before, so maybe we shouldn't react.
We shouldn't. We'd be beating that horse to death.
Absolutely. While touting horns.
Okay, so what in God's good earth are we going to talk about?
Oh, well, we need to talk about our 1099s.
We can. I don't have much time, but I suppose I can breach that topic.
We have 17 minutes.
We could chat about that. Mm-hmm. The reason what I wanted to mention mostly about... what are we talking about?
1099. Maybe we can describe what a 1099.
Well, I was thinking 529. For some reason, I had that in my head.
We're past that.
Yes, but we're talking 1099s. Mm-hmm. Okay, Pete, why don't you tell everyone what a 1099 is?
That is the form that is sent out, usually the first part. I think by the end of January, to report your income that needs to be reported on your federal and state income tax returns, and it. Other than partnerships, which in S corporations come out on a K-1, but otherwise 1099s are how the IRS finds out how much you earned over the prior year and have to pay tax on.
What that was not reported on your W-2 from your employer.
Correct. Most of the time, people get 1099s from investment accounts. Mm-hmm. They can also get them from retirement accounts.
There's a lot of flavors of 1099s. There's 1099-something, and there's quite a number of those, correct?
Yes.
There are several, yes. Mm-hmm.
You're the one who wanted to talk about this.
Well, what we're running into right now are people contacting the office wondering, where's my 1099? I can't do my taxes.
So maybe a 1099 div for dividends. They're looking for that. Maybe they
1099R for distribution from a retirement account. Mm-hmm.
So, and maybe the year before they remember receiving such a 1099, and now they didn't get one this year, so they think it's a mistake.
Isn't there a 1099 INT too?
Yeah, there's an INT for interest.
Interest. Mm-hmm. Get those generally from your bank when you earn interest in your savings account. These days, it's usually a very small number, right?
We're just lucky it's not negative.
Right.
Yet. So we receive calls every now and then from people saying, can I get the 1099 for my account? I want to do my taxes. And I look up the account, and I see that they have a retirement account, usually an IRA with us. And I'll say to them, you did not take any money out of your IRA, so no 1099 is going to be issued. And I think that's one of the things people have to understand, because in a regular bank account or in a regular investment account, you're getting a 1099 INT, as Chris put it, or 1099 DIV for dividend. You're getting these onto these accounts. You're taught to wait by your CPA to get these documents, and then they can do the tax. But you do not get one for distributions from an IRA unless you distribute from an IRA. If you just hold the IRA, do nothing, even though the IRA may pay interest, even though the IRA may pay dividends, as long as that money doesn't leave the IRA, there will be no 1099. The problem is when money does leave retirement accounts or leaves IRAs or a 401k, sometimes you get a 1099, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't.
That seems inappropriate.
What? It's a Mounds commercial.
No, distributing from an IRA but not receiving a 1099.
Oh, well, sometimes, depending on which retirement account, you may or may not get a 1099. So let's talk about that. We had someone recently move money from one IRA custodian to another. And they did it via what is known as a direct transfer. The money moved directly from IRA custodian one to IRA custodian two, and no 1099 was issued.
No taxable event, and thus no 1099 reporting.
Correct. But they got a hold of us, and they said, gee, I didn't get my 1099. And I said, well, there is no 1099, pretty much for exactly what Chris said. I said, you never took money out of the IRA. You simply moved it from one IRA to another. But also recently, we had a person reach out to us who, for a variety of reasons that we don't need to get into, took money from one IRA she had, let's say IRA at custodian one, and moved it to IRA at custodian two via what is known as a 60-day rollover. In other words, this person took the money directly from the IRA. She got the check. The check was written out to her. Within 60 days, she deposited the money in the bank, wrote out a new check for the exact same amount as the distribution check, and put it in her IRA number 2. I told her this will not be a taxable event. You will not pay taxes on it. This was last year. And she reached out to us in a semi-panic not too long ago because her tax preparer said that that is a taxable event and she's going to have to pay taxes on it because the 1099 was issued.
Incorrectly was the story. He claimed that the
right
1099 from custodian IRA number 1 had issued her a 1099 reporting the distribution as possibly taxable. And he, the tax preparer, believed that this was in error since she, via the 60-day rollover, had put the money in IRA number 2. And he believed that the IRA number 1 needed to reissue a corrected 1099, showing it as a non-taxable event.
Right, because it was not coded G, direct transfer. Mm-hmm. It was coded as a distribution, mm-hmm. taxable amount undetermined. So it took a little bit of the person who contacted me. I said, "Don't worry about it. Just give me the number to your tax preparer. I'll let them know what's going on." And when I reached out to them, it's exactly the way Chris described. The tax preparer said, "Well, you need to get a corrected 1099. You need to let custodian one know that this money was rolled over because they have it marked as a distribution." And I said, "No, I'm not even going to do that because custodian one is not going to issue a new 1099. They have no idea if this money was rolled over or not. They have no idea. All that they know is they wrote the check directly to this woman, and that is a distribution, flat out distribution." Mm-hmm. So the 1099 is correct, and the conversation went to the extent of, "Well, no, the money was put back into an IRA within 60 days I said, "But custodian one doesn't know that. Custodian two knows, and also what custodian two knows is the date the money was received. They don't know where it came from. So custodian two is going to report it the end of May as a 5498. God, all these numbers in my head. As a 5498 documenting the receipt. What you have to do as the preparer is on line 15A of the 1040, list the gross amount of all distributions." And this woman had several IRAs. Only one was rolled over. The others were taken as distributions. "List the gross amount of all distributions. On 15B, you're going to list the taxable amount, which is pretty much all distributions except for the one distribution she rolled over." Mm-hmm. "That one is not going to be listed on line 15B. And you're going to write in the margins, rollover." And that's all the IRS mm-hmm. needs to see.
So 15B is zero for her if that's the only distribution.
But that wasn't in her
case.
She wasn't, right.
Yeah, for her it was a little different. But if that's all you did that year, you would have the amount in 15A is the amount of distribution, which then will match the 1099 that IRA number one custodian sent to you. So you're going to look for that match. And then you're not going to pay tax on it. And the explanation is rollover, and they will have received on 5498 reported from custodian number two. Eventually those will reconcile. Or if not, if the IRS ever comes to you later on and says, "Hey, we don't know what you did with this. We don't believe you on this distribution that it shouldn't be taxable," prove it.
Right. And that's called the letter audit. And you may get that. Mm-hmm. In the 17 years I've been practicing, I've probably helped at least a dozen clients, if not more, with letter audits. Letter audits happen on rollovers. They're all on rollover issues. Mm-hmm. But again, so that's how you do it. And that's how the game works, because as her tax return gets filed, the IRS sees a discrepancy. They see the gross distribution does not match the taxable amount. So they're going to look at the 1040 and they're going to see rollover written there. And now they know, they make a note of it. We should get a form 5498 by the end of May, because that's when these go out, by the end of May, equal to the difference that's not showing. And if they don't get that 5498, you can bet your sweet boopy you're going to get a letter audit. But even if they do get the form 5498, a certain amount of these rollovers are pulled for a random letter audit.
Can you put your sweet boopy on black 35?
You could.
Just wondering.
So that's how that works. But how about, let's switch it up, guys. What if you had a 401k and you take the 401k and you transfer the 401k to an IRA, not as a rollover, you never get the money. Instead, you do it as a direct trustee-to-trustee transfer from your 401k to your IRA. Is there a 1099 issued in this case or not?
Is that a rhetorical question?
It's rhetorical. One of you can try answering it.
Well, that means we don't answer.
Rhetorical means it's obvious.
No, rhetorical means I want you to answer it.
No, negative. Opposite of that.
I don't want you to answer it?
Correct.
Well, why would I ask a question if I don't want you to answer it?
Because it's rhetorical.
It's so obvious that no one should need to answer it.
Oh, well, no, this isn't rhetorical. This is a question.
I believe there's going to be a 1099 issued because it's changing from one account type to another account type, unlike an IRA to IRA, which is simply a custodial transfer. How does that sound?
I'm with Chris.
You're with Chris? Yep. Both of you are correct.
Nice job, Pete.
Yeah. I knew the answer.
So that gets a lot of people because it moves trustee to trustee. When you move money also from a 401k, the IRS always considers that to be a rollover. Even if it moves trustee to trustee, it's always a rollover. So you will get a 1099, folks, if you move money from a 401k to an IRA. There will be a 1099. It will be coded G, trustee to trustee. You don't have to worry about line 15A and 15B. It will be coded G, taxable amount zero.
Instead of undetermined.
Correct. Now, if you do move money from a 401k to an IRA and it's coded as a distribution, taxable amount undetermined, now you got some splaining to do and you have to maybe see if you can get a new 1099 or don't over panic, wait for the letter audit and then explain the 1099 was wrong. Here's what I did and I have proof. But when you move money from a 401k to an IRA, as Chris said, it's a different plan type, and the IRS considers all money moved from a 401k to be a rollover. So let's switch this. What if you have an IRA and you transfer the money directly, trustee to trustee, into a 401k? Will a 1099 be issued in that case? We know it's not issued IRA to IRA, but would it be issued IRA to 401k?
I'll guess. I don't know the answer, but I would guess that it does not trigger a 1099.
Okay. And Chris, what mm-hmm. do you think?
What's the answer?
I didn't get the answer. I was asking you your thoughts. Do you want to copy, Chris? Or do you want to answer yourself, Pete? The other way around. Pete, do you want to copy Chris's answer?
We have to get name
well,
tags.
Well, he jumped on board my ship, so I'll join him as well.
Like the good ship lollipop?
Yes.
Both of you are correct yet again.
Wow, way to go, Chris.
Excellent.
Excellent. Whenever you move from one account type to another, especially IRA to 401k, even though the money's not coming from the 401k, it's going into the 401k, there will be a 1099 issued, again, code G, taxable amount zero, but you are moving into the 401k. Final one. What if you had a 401k and you took a $50,000 loan out of it? Will there be a 1099 on the loan sent to you?
Negative.
I'm with Chris.
Correct.
Hey, thank you. I didn't know there was going to be
three.
A test today, but we're
great. We're doing well.
You guys
okay,
are three
no
for
more
three.
Questions.
Unless you quit with an outstanding loan.
Right, because there is no distribution. It's a loan. Mm-hmm. As long as you don't miss any payments, the IRS will never even know you took money out.
Right.
Because the custodian is saying, look, you didn't take a distribution, you took a loan. It becomes a distribution if you do not pay this loan back in 5 years. And they will amortize it for you. Most will amortize it quarterly. Some amortize it monthly. Money will be withheld directly from your paycheck at the employer. And as long as you don't quit or as long as you don't somehow default on the loan, no 1099 will ever be issued. But if you do default on the loan, let's say you pay $25,000 of the $50,000 back and then you quit. Most custodians will not continue to carry a loan once you quit, mostly because they cannot debit the money automatically from your paycheck anymore, and they're not a bank in the business of waiting for payments to arrive. So they will consider this a full distribution if not paid within 30 days, and now issue at tax time a 1099, not for the full $50,000 loan, but for the $25,000 outstanding loan that wasn't paid back. So I just kind of wanted to cover some of these odd times when you do receive a 1099 and don't receive a 1099 and why. And if you think about it, it is pretty rational on why you wouldn't get it. But what do you do if you got a 1099 and there was a mistake in it? And we run into that. The most common one that I, not most common, but one of the unique ones that I ran into was a few years ago. You can get amended 1099s. Remember, in the first situation we discussed, the tax preparer wanted me to get an amended 1099, wanted me to reach out to the custodian. I said, no, the custodian didn't do anything wrong. But in the past, we have found wrong 1099s. And to fix them, here's the key. Most 1099s will be issued by the end of January. Not all of them. A lot of them on brokerage accounts don't. If you can fix them before the end of February, it's very easy, or a lot easier, because they have not been filed with the IRS yet. The custodian will have sent you, but they haven't sent the ones to the IRS yet. But if you can reach them, and we'll explain maybe next week when we're live, Chris, the situation I ran into, we corrected it in February, and it was very easy to do because it hadn't gone to the IRS yet. But by the end of February, the IRS has their copy because they're gearing up for tax returns coming in. Now it's hard for the custodian to correct because they got to pull one that the IRS bureaucracy has and somehow replace it with the regular one, and that's where you run into problems. We'll talk about that on another show.
Perfect. So thanks, everybody, for joining us this week on the Retirement and IRA Show. We've come to another glorious ending of the show. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Like what you just heard? Missed some of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the Retirement and IRA Show.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.